Women are expected to absorb traumas both subtle and loud and move on. Shoulder the weight of the world. But when the world fucks with us, the worst thing we can do is bury it. Embracing it makes us strong enough to fuck the world right back.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are bringing you all the updates on TikTok's trendiest books and letting you know whether you should take the time out of your schedule to give them a read. I'm Caitlin.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Casey. Today we are reading A Second Chance Romance. And so the general outline is by Tia Williams. And there's this sort of whirlwind romance that happens between the two main characters way back in like the high school days. Fast forward to present day. They're both adults kind of dealing with like the traumas of their youth. They both had, you know, very traumatic upbringings, and that kind of plays into their whole like dysfunctional love story. They meet again as adults and are basically trying to figure out if it's time when they can like finally make it work. So, yeah.
And if this is going well, you can see us on YouTube right now.
Yes.
If it's not going well, I will be cutting this part out.
Smart move.
Yeah. So look us up on YouTube if this works out and watch our faces.
And it's kind of intimidating, guys, not gonna lie. So
I should have prepared
my little snick snacks while we do this.
Yeah. Casey's okay. Drinking wine. I'm
takes
drinking
a big drink.
I'm drinking ranch water and Caitlin's sober.
I'm drinking chamomile tea because I have a stuffy nose. So now you know. I feel exposed. Well, let's start with our usual. Let's look at some reviews. Do you guys have some good ones this week?
Yes. So I went on Goodreads and I normally go to the one stars, but when I went to the one stars, mildly racist. So I immediately exited out of that and just went to five stars because I figured that's where I'm going to find less racist reviews. So this is a five-star review on Goodreads, and it says, love, 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 a beautiful, messy, heartbreaking love story with two endearing main characters and a whole world of topics explored, including masculinity, race, addiction, chronic illness, motherhood, and writing. This is a joy and love coexisting with the grief and darkness of life, and I loved every minute of it.
Oh,
heartwarming.
I know.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I normally go for funny reviews. I feel like that there were not any.
None.
None.
So I have a few five-star ones. One four-star one. And it says, and then one five-star one, because that's who I am. Anyway. It said, I love a good romance, and this was a great romance story. Sad, heartbreaking, unhealthy. But at the same time, you couldn't help but root for the MC. Related to that. Mm-hmm. And then the next one, this is just two quotes from the book. Five-star review. Stop writing about me. You first.
Yeah.
The sexual tension.
That was like, that scene hit me. I was like, ooh, spicy.
It was so good. Just looking for a man to write a whole book series inspired by me.
Seriously.
I'll write a book series inspired by him, and then we'll meet years later.
So much work. My goodness.
Right.
14 books. That's insane.
Yeah.
Yes.
I have 2 3-star reviews. And I may have found a funny one, but I'll do that one a second.
Okay.
So this is a 3-star. I like the stories and the mom's struggle trying to be better than her own mother and spinning stories. I hate that it's a notebook situation. And in this day of technology, they could have just texted each other. How, in 15 years or whatever, did she not just Google his name and see an arrest report? He can text and keep up with 15 kids, but can't text and reach out. Drove me nuts.
Period. There.
Yeah.
And then the funny one. I think it's funny. 3 stars. Maybe I do hate love.
I kind of love that for them.
We need to help that person find some good books about love.
Okay, well, the overall Goodreads rating is 4 out of 5 stars, and the overall Amazon rating is 4.4 out of 5 stars. Where do you guys come down?
I mean, absolute love. Gave it 5 stars. It's heartwarming. It's heartbreaking. It's tragic, but also not. And it's a romance story, so I love it.
I also gave it 5 stars. It was a whirlwind of a romance and a really good second chance romance, I think. I think the characters were well developed, and honestly, 1 whole star just for Audrey. Yeah.
I'm going to give it 4. So I did really, really like it. I thought it was super well written. I loved the characters. But the ending just like got a little too melodramatic for me. I felt like there was one point where she just kind of like lost hold of the ending. And I don't know. Honestly, it like docked it a whole star because there was a point when I thought I was going to give it 5 stars. And I just didn't really love the way it ultimately ended. It felt a little rushed, which was so disappointing because I thought the whole rest of the book was like perfect.
Yeah.
Not fair. I just overlooked him because it made me feel so gooey inside.
I 100% agree that the ending was a little rushed. Yeah. I mean, it felt so real and so raw and just like human life. Like we were literally stepping into these people's lives and that was it. But I felt like because it's a book, they had to climax it, and the climax had to add more drama. And that's kind of why she did what she did. And I think it would have been okay if we had just continued on with their lives and it wasn't like this huge, big drama deal.
Right. Yeah, because there's one point with Audrey where I was like, and now you pushed me too far.
I did see your review that you didn't love her and didn't think she was realistic as a 12-year-old. But
yes. But anyway, so our discussion questions, as always, is this book more plot or character driven?
I think it's character. It's just so much about the two people and how far they've come in the time since they've last seen each other. I know there like is the plot is them like getting back together, but I just think the character development in this book drives it more than the whole plot of them meeting back up and writing books.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's more character driven. I mean, you can make an argument that there's a little bit of plot points that keeps them away from each other. And that's kind of what drives some miscommunication, which is pretty typical in a second chance romance, which is normally why I hate second chance romances. Liked this one. This is probably the only second chance romance I actually liked. But yeah, I think it's all about them and their struggle and their overcoming their traumas from teenagehood and coming back together 15 years later and trying to find a way that makes it work.
Yeah, I mean, I actually agree. I do feel like mostly it's the characters' choices that drive the plot. And there's not a lot of outside factors that are like causing things to be out of their control. That is, of course, with the exception of a few incredibly dramatic scenes. But
and her bestie. That is out of their control.
Yes, her bestie is... Her machinations are crazy.
Yes, I do. I mean, imagine having someone throw a whole like mythical party where she flies out every person you know. It was like the fact that that was believable is insane to me still. Anyway, okay. So have you / would you read other books by the author?
I have not, but I would.
I would too. I'm looking up. She has a couple other. Oh, okay. She has a couple other romances, which one I have seen before. It's called Before I Let Go. And that one has gotten a little bit of hype on BookTok.
Yes.
But I did not know that it was by the same person.
I haven't.
Oh, wait, hold on. I'm sorry. That was totally wrong. Google just brought it up when I Googled the author, which is
like, wow, I had no idea.
No, because I was also shocked by that. No, they're not the same author.
Okay.
Okay. Well, let's try this again, Google.
I think I see one book. I haven't read any of her books, but I see one book that says Audra and Bash are just friends. Is that a continuation with Audra as the main character?
Great question.
Yeah, coming in 2025. Random note, but her book, A Love Song for Ricky Wilde, has the most beautiful cover.
Oh, it is. Meet Audra, junior class president, debate team captain, unofficial student therapist. It's totally her. Oh, so she has a continuation book.
So obviously the reviews were like, Audra's the best character. So...
Well, okay, so it's not coming out until May 2025. So it only has one review currently. Mm-hmm. And it's 5 stars. So
let's see if we can get a hold of an arc.
That would be nice. Right. Tia Williams, we love you. We'd love to read it.
Also, her other book, A Love Song for Ricky Wilde, has very similar reviews. Goodreads, 4.04 stars. So interesting. I think we're all interested.
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. What about the pacing? This book is pretty short.
So in my memory, I was like, oh, I blew through this. And then I looked at my Goodreads and it took me like 10 days to read. So I really think I must have just like started it, put it down for many days, picked it up and finished it. Because the way I remember it, I just like sat down and devoured it.
Yeah, I read it in 2 days. It took me a while to pick it up, but that's because of my own personal reading slump. But once I picked it up, basically finished it in 2 sittings.
I'm the same. I think I sat down and read it in like 2 chunks. I thought the pacing was really good. I didn't think there were really any parts where the story lagged. And it felt like the right length, like around the time you're kind of ready to be done. It's like wrapping up.
Yeah.
What about, would you watch a movie or TV show about this book?
This would be a great rom-com for Netflix. Would, let's be real.
It would be great movie. Yeah.
I'd be all over it.
Yeah.
I think it would be really, really good.
I would be surprised if there haven't been film rights discussions between the author and some sort of streaming service.
Me too. Oh, interesting. Okay. IMDb says 7 Days in June novel and works for television. So apparently there has at least been interest.
TV, I didn't expect that. I would have thought movie.
I didn't either. I really think it would be a great movie, especially if you weave in more of her past, because mm-hmm. she talks a lot about the past generations of women in her family. Yes. And I think doing sort of like a historical weave between all of their like lives would be like so good.
Like a This Is Us kind of thing.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. Okay. We'll keep an eye on that one.
Okay. Now it's time for your busy girl rating.
I mean, I'm going to stick with my 5. Great pacing, great book. No complaints.
I mean, honestly, I agree. I see no reason for it not to be a 5. I think this is easily enjoyable for almost anyone who likes a romance.
Yeah, I mean, I'm even someone that normally doesn't really like a romance, and I really liked it. So I think it's also a 5. It was quick and it was easy, but it also had a lot of depth to it.
To be clear, I'm pretty sure it was Casey who chose this one.
I did. Yes. I really wanted to read this one.
So I was waiting for it to be some weird lit fic thing.
Yeah.
I tend to like not look at the summaries. I just pick them up and start reading. I was like, oh, how lovely.
Literally did not know this was a romantic book.
No.
Until I started reading it, because I just assume all Casey books are like some weird grotesque lit fic that I'm going to hate. So it took me forever to pick this up.
No, I honestly don't even remember the first time I heard about this book, but I am not a big book talk girly. I'm a lot more onto Bookstagram, and I follow a bunch of like lit fic bookstagrammers. And I just felt like it had to be good because a lot of the lit fit grammars were actually had nice things to say about it. So I was like, okay, intrigued.
I was like, ugh, I have to pick up the one Casey wanted us to read. And I was so pleasantly surprised. So
I feel like I've had like two good ones in a row.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're on your game.
Yep.
Okay.
You ready for the spoiler alert section? We can spoil all the juicy romance gossip. Casey just took a big swallow of wine, so I guess she's ready.
I'm so excited.
Well, yeah. Okay. Spoiler alert. Don't move on from pause here. Read it. Come back. Listen to the rest of this. And then we'll get into our first question. So I really love this book's, like, how it dealt with invisible disabilities and disability in general, because it's not only Eva's disability, it's her grandmother's disability. So she kind of inherited it through her family, but like everyone was treated differently in different time periods for the said disability. Her grandmother was called a witch with Satan in, like, basically taking over her body, and she killed her husband. Which is a crazy story, but loved it. And then Eva has this invisible disability, and she copes with opioids, and doctors kind of ignore her because she's a Black woman, and women apparently don't have pain, or, you know, doctors just discredit our pain, and especially with Black women. So she's given so many opioids, and she's finally finding a way to manage it in the 21st century. But it's because she felt like she needed to help to help with her daughter. So what did you think of this portrayal of debilitating migraines and invisible disabilities, and how she kind of puts on this face in front of the public, pretending that this isn't a thing that's happening to her?
I mean, we all have those days where we just don't feel good, but still have to go about doing our stuff. But like, she feels horrid, like wrenching pain, and has to go entertain book clubs of smutty book readers and stuff. And I'm like, there's nothing I'd want to do less in my life than continue the career she was on. So like square one, she's a super tough FMC, and you have a lot of respect for her. And it really just builds her character right from the beginning, because you're like, I would never be able to do what she's doing. And it's a lot of cred.
I definitely loved it, especially as someone with something which is also like a semi-invisible disability, like being type 1 diabetic. I'm not comparing our disabilities, they're completely different. But there's a lot of that thing in the psyche of like, you constantly deal with something that other people don't understand. And it's like, you're constantly like, how much do I explain to people? Like, other people don't really get it. Like, there's this just like other part of your life that you kind of deal with privately. And so I like really loved it. I felt like emotionally it was just, for me, like relatable in some ways, even though I thankfully don't experience like acute pain like her. And like the dealing with doctors and like the constant like interaction with the medical system, which is like really stressful. It like felt just so real. And I can tell that like either the author has dealt with something similar or did like a lot of research, because it was just so well written. And so I would like really, really loved it. I felt sort of the way I felt reading Violet, where you're like, yes, like someone who's like dealing with a disability and it's also a bad bitch. Like, yes.
Yeah. We love to see it lately.
Yeah. And I loved how her disability, because like, I feel like we so shy away from diagnosing like opiates of like, and talking about this as a thing that happens. And so I really loved how, like, in her teenage years, how she kind of went to the brink and she self-medicated and self-harmed. And showing these as depictions and examples is super important, because you know there are so many people out there struggling and being told no by doctors and being told you're imagining it, you're not actually dealing with what you're dealing with. And showing that this is like a thing and putting this in the forefront of like literary fiction, I just think is like chef's kiss, masterclass. And like, you could feel her pain throughout the entire book. It was such a vivid description. You knew what these migraines were doing to her.
Yeah. Well, then you have the added component that as a kid, her mother depends on her. And then as an adult, her daughter depends on her. So she has to function. She has no choice. She cannot lie down and just succumb to her pain. And so that adds like this whole other layer to her character, is that she is just constantly being depended on.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's a great point. Like, the scenes with her when she's a child were so crushing because she's just someone who really needed help. And like, every child is like that. You know, every child like really needs help and really needs the adults in their lives to show up for them. And the fact that she didn't have that was just so heartbreaking. And especially because, you know, this is the pain that she's dealing with physically, much less emotionally. And yeah, just also then the contrast of the way that she was as a mom was just also really touching then, because you kind of understand the full picture of like how her trauma informed who she is as a person, but also like how hard she's working to be a great mom.
And yet she somehow still produces grade A vampire smut.
And despite being very sexually frustrated, does write some like very famous vampire fan fiction.
Queen.
Queen.
Slay.
Yes. Okay. So on that note, the book deals a lot with motherhood and generational trauma. And there's a lot of themes just about like what you inherit from the past. So what do you think of Eva and Lizette and then the sort of past generations of their family in Louisiana? And also, of course, Audrey.
I was fascinated when Lizette reappeared and you got a glimpse at her life in the current time period after you had seen so much of the chaos she caused for Eva in the past. And so it's really interesting to see how that story continued. But after you got like a firm look at how chaotic she made Eva's childhood, all the men she brought home, the different lives it caused them to lead, and how it kind of pushed her daughter towards self-medication because her mom wasn't present enough to help her, you know, navigate doctors and navigate the world. And it's like a perfect explanation for how she ended up meeting Shane and falling so hard and fast, because no one had ever cared for her in her life. But that's the way her mother learned and her mother's mother learned. And they just always, that's just how the way it was. And you get to see Eva be like, I will not be that way for my daughter, and see her really work hard to change that. And I feel like you see a lot of real life stories now that are women who are saying, I will not continue the way my ancestors have. And it's really powerful storytelling.
Yeah. I also loved seeing how their sort of inherited passed down disability was like a part of the generations, because part of like the trauma in the first place is that the women of the past were living in these times where they were dealing with pain and they had really no like medical interventions. Like, they had no doctors, they had no like legitimate pain therapies. And so that's part of why their just lives were so hard and they were so unable to cope, much less like just the constant gaslighting from like everyone around them. And so, right, just like the fact that, you know, her great grandmother kind of went crazy and like shot her husband, and it starts this like whole kind of famous family story. It's like, you know, born from this like pain that no one else can understand.
Yeah. And I loved when she, in the end, she goes down to Louisiana and gets to like dive deep into her family's roots, and talking with that 100-year-old woman on the porch who was in the schoolhouse and taught all of her generations of Mercier women. And she talks about that story and she tells it from a different narrative, where she was just like, no, her husband was much like her father, kind of an ass, and wanted to exorcise her because they thought she had a demon in her, which is wild that women's pain, like, I mean, you read about it all the time, like melancholia and all these, like, let's get you a lobotomy. Like, that's going to help you with your pain and stuff like that. And so they legitimately thought her pain was the devil and exercising her twice in her lifetime. And then eventually she snapped and she shot him, which, and the woman's like, no one mourned that. And then she made a profit off of it, which is just the such a good part of the story. It's just like, yeah, I made my devil juice.
Well, and the fact that she realized she was ready to write something different and what she chose was the story of the Mercier women. And I'm like, okay, well, I need this book in real life now because I'm so intrigued because all of the women that were written in the book were so vivid. I was like, I need to know more about every one of them and how that leads us to dear sweet Audra, however you say it.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess if they're French, it's probably Audra, but I was saying Audrey the whole time, so that's going to be tough. Same. But
I was saying Audrey too.
Much less we pronounce John Vieve in the French way, please.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying Eva. Sorry, but I'm not going to try.
Sorry, I'm not Shane.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I think it was interesting because I wasn't expecting Lizette's POV. I was not expecting to get that kind of backstory of her and her basically saying, you think your life is hard. My life was hard. And so she made it kind of seem like Eva's childhood was tame compared to hers. And so that just shows how like generational trauma, like really delves deep into parenting. It informs your worldview and informs how you move about society. And I'm not like saying Lizette is like at all like can atone for her sins and what she did to her daughter and how she like basically just was a prostitute essentially and was mooching off of rich men in order to keep her and her baby afloat, which granted it was not great, but at the same time she did give her a house and a life and allowed her to grow up to go to Princeton and become this famous author and have a very high functioning daughter. But then it was also interesting how she then proceeded to lie about her past to her daughter in order to make it seem more happy or more like try to make Lizette seem like a good person. I'm like, but then you're just letting the past repeat itself because now your daughter seems to think that like your childhood was like this happy go lucky roses situation, and that's not the case. And if you had told her the truth, maybe she wouldn't want to get out of the situation as much.
And Audra is clearly smart enough to comprehend the true situation. The best character in the book, hands down, in my opinion, is sweet little therapist Audra. But you could see how you're right, like how Eva lying about her childhood could quickly spiral things for her own daughter, and she kind of has to come to terms with the fact that like telling your history as it is what helps the next generation move forward.
Yeah, especially because like you can see why Audra doesn't understand her mom sometimes, and it's because she's just like operating with bad data, you know, like she thinks that she had this certain kind of childhood. She thinks that her mom was this certain type of mom. Like, she doesn't understand why it's so important for her mom that she has this like elite education and like appreciates this very comfortable life. And it's like, well, if she had told her the truth about how she grew up, then Audra would have like more context for why those things are so important. I did love Audra. For most of the book, I thought she was fine. The moment that pushed me too far was at the very end of the book when Shane and her mom are like, we've broken up. We still have like too much shit to deal with. And her mom is in Louisiana and she's like, I know what she needs. Like, hush, mother. I know there's only one thing that can solve this. Let's text Aunt Cece. And then they like go and like conspire to get Shane. I was like, okay, no, I'm sorry. That's too much.
I mean, but it fit the character that had been written for us.
Oh, yeah. That was who she was to the core, was the fixer needing to professionally psychoanalyze everyone around her.
And she got a lot of her character from her aunt, Cece.
The 12-year-old. I was like, yes. The 12-year-old is like, I love, my mom needs right. that man right now. I was just like, no.
I find, though, working in schools, I forget mm-hmm. how astute kids are from like earlier ages. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like I'm such an adult. Sometimes I'm like, oh, they have no idea what you're talking about. And then you have a conversation with like a 10-year-old and you're like, oh my goodness. Okay. They grasp way more of the world than I thought they did.
Yeah.
So
it's actually crazy because I was less in disbelief of her character because I listened to this podcast episode from Trevor Noah, What Now? And mm-hmm. he interviewed kids because he wrote a children's book.
Aww.
And so the entire episode was like him and his co-hosts like psychoanalyzing this like session where they just had like six kids on a couch in a room and just talking about the world's issues, essentially. And they range from like 6 years old to 12 years old. And the most profound question of the day was, what would you do if you could change something in the world? And you would expect like make candy available everywhere. Like you would expect the crazy outlandish things that kids think of. But the number one answer was end world hunger and end wars, because they see the conflict and they see the turmoil and they see people on the streets being hungry. Like once you got past those points, then they started going into like cheese for everyone. Like that's when they started going that. But their first thoughts were like very deep, evocative thoughts about let's end world hunger. Let's find a way to make sure everyone has a house. Like it was just really interesting how profound like 6-year-olds can be about world issues.
Well, and like on the other end of things, I just watched a TikTok. I'm sorry. But it was a mom recording her. I don't know. The girl had to be like 7 or 8 year old daughter. And they were in Barnes and Noble and the girl was like, mom, there's this real hottie over here. And the mom the whole time is thinking the girl is like talking about a cute boy, the girl's age. And then she like points him out and she's like, are you trying to set me up with a boyfriend? And the girl's like, yeah, he's hot.
Oh so, my like, God.
They totally think that way, even though we as adults forget that we thought that way.
Look, I'm not saying that children aren't profound. I think they're very profound. I think.
Yes, it's far-fetched. I get what you're saying.
Yeah. Inserting myself that deeply into my mom's relationship is like very hard for me to grasp at today.
I feel like though single mothers with one daughter have like this different relationship that's much more
best friendly,
sisterly than mother-daughterly. Plus she does take care of her mom in some capacities because of her mom's pain. So like, I don't know.
And also she learned from
they trained her well at the woke New York school.
Okay. Anyway, the main plot of the book.
Right. We haven't even got to the whole reason the book exists.
We still haven't even touched the actual romance. So the main plot is between Eva and Shane. Obviously, we get flashbacks from each other in high school for 7 days in June. It's just so poetic to me. And then we obviously get then their present day, and then they finally at long last end up together. What did you guys think of the romance and also the kind of depictions of their childhood?
I needed the flashbacks to move faster because I was like, what is the catalyst of them not being together? I don't understand. They're so perfect. And so I was just like waiting for the other shoe to drop. I was like, what caused this? And then when it did, it was heartbreaking. I was like, oh. I loved it. They burned like fast and but like believably so.
Yeah.
Because they had shared trauma and were the correct people in the moment both times to help each other through it. The public sex. Interesting choice of ways to rekindle your flame. But
I mean, kind of believable for the chemical romance that they had, where it's just like immediate infatuation. So it kind of makes sense. But at the same time, yeah, I was cringing a bit at the public sex.
But it also wasn't like lust. It was very well written to be like a love, a like soul connection, not just like I need to jump your bones because we're alone.
No, because she wasn't thinking that the entire time. She was trying to find a way to trust him again. But then they start talking and they spend the whole day together, and she just feels like this instant connection and kinetic energy that they felt the need to do that in public. But I mean, love is love.
Right. So my critique, I did think for the most part it was super well written. And for the most part, that made it very believable in a way that I feel like other books just try and fail to do. As adults, it was a little too insta-love for me. But I was sort of with it. Like, I wasn't against it. I was just like, this is like maybe a little fast. Then, so they decide to break up. Okay, I loved that ending where they're like, it's still not the right time for us. Like, I don't know. Yes. I love a breakup story.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sort of just in love with the idea of like these two people just keep reconnecting like 7 days in June. And it's like, they're not the one, but they're also just so connected and like good for each other in this like weird way. I kind of just loved that. And I wasn't opposed to the getting back together ultimately, but I just didn't feel she spent the time to make me buy into it necessarily. Like, it felt like
that part was rushed.
Yeah. Yes. It felt like we've decided that there's still a lot of like hurt here and a lot as people that we need to work through. So we're going to say no. And then all of a sudden it was like, never mind. That was, I was like, whoa, girl, you wrote a beautiful breakup scene that had my heart smashed. And now you want me to just be in love again? Like, I was like, what?
Yeah. I'd be curious to see if the epilogue was written after she had finished the story and publishers had told her that a romance novel cannot end on a breakup.
It's true.
It feels very publisher driven, even though
it cannot be classified as a romance if there is not a happy ending.
Yes. And so I love that last chapter. That last chapter was heart wrenching and heartbreaking, but it felt final and it felt like a good way of ending the story, because he obviously has an addictive personality and he's still dealing with a lot of his addictions. Even though he is sober, it is quite obvious he gets way too invested in things and he cannot be a good father figure to her daughter, and she needs to work on herself and finding her own self in her history. And she really needs to find her own love of herself outside of her daughter. So I feel like
if they had just said more time had passed than what it said,
3 months is not enough,
then it would have been totally believable, you know? I mean, I get the like, yes, I like the idea of soulmates who aren't necessarily romantic. I do believe, you know, there are plenty of like friendships and things that can be classified as like soulmates. But I do think the way she wrote the characters, there was no way they'd ever be apart. So it was believable that they tried it for a few months and were like, ah, screw it.
I mean, yeah, it's believable. It just felt like a 180 from the last chapter to the epilogue. It felt rushed. I agree with Casey. It felt very rushed. But I liked it because I'm like, in my heart of hearts, I wish for a happy ending like every other young girl in America. Like, we fairy tales. We grew up on those fairy tales, like happy endings and like love wins. But at the same time, like, there was something so heartbreakingly beautiful about that last chapter.
Yeah. So when Eva's just the kind of character who always needs a little push. She needs a push to go to the book event. She needs a push to pursue the book she's actually interested in. So she gets a little push to pursue the man. So she just needs a little push.
Well,
also, though, when his mentee died in the hospital, my heart was ripped out and shredded and stomped on. And I was so crushed.
So fucking sad. Oh my God. And okay, so this is another book where I really want to compliment her use of POV. Normally when books jump around a lot, it's annoying. It doesn't feel totally necessary. It's like a little bit aggravating and confusing. This book jumps POV a lot, and there's some characters you get consistently and some you get just once, and it always felt right. Like, it was always used well.
Yeah. And I normally hate multi-POV.
Well, because it's both multi-POV and time jumps, which are two things when you add together tend to not, that tends to downgrade a book honestly, yes. because it's been happening way too much. But there, it was such like fleeting and few. And then the moments that it happened were so necessary in order to understand like the ending and the complex of the relationship and all of the like worlds and the swirling hurricane that's around them during
this.
Well,
I'm sure where you're going with that is we get the mentee's point of view when he's walking into trouble, which just made it even more soul crushing.
It was probably my favorite scene just because you know that it's not going to end well. And you're like, it just wrote that tension so beautifully. And like, you're just so emotionally in the moment. Like I was so emotionally locked in for that chapter. Like I was so there and invested. And you also just like, it's sort of that like tragedy of like knowing something ends well, doesn't end well, but like, and he's just this like little boy deciding in these moments and like, being in a bad situation and not being able to make better choices and like not knowing who to trust. And it was just, oh my God, crushed me.
I just, my sister, her last job was in a really, really bad area. The school she worked in, extreme poverty. And it just like hearing some of her stories and then reading that and knowing that his teacher let him down when sometimes your teacher is your only lifeline was just, it was so much. And like, I know when my sister left that school, all she kept saying is, but they needed me, you know, but like she had to move for her husband's work. And I'm like, yeah, but like other kids will need you. But like, she's like, I've let them down, you know, and it's just, it's sad. I liked the little undertone of how important some teachers are to kids who need a little extra love outside of school. Like the teachers who go that extra step are the ones who change lives. And unfortunately, in this case, Shane changed a life for the worse. And you felt that so deep down.
But you also kind of feel bad for Shane because he's just finding his own happiness. And
right.
It's just because it's not his fault. It is not his fault that this situation happened, but you right. know, because of his addictive personality, he mm-hmm. is going to blame himself for the rest of his life because he gets way too invested into things and he got way too invested into this mentorship because you do have to create boundaries for yourself, like for your own mental health, for the health of the child, because the child cannot become dependent on something that is not
definitely illegal to text your students for the most part.
Yes. And I think,
granted, they weren't his students any longer, but
yes, children need advocates and they need a stable person to be their advocate. And that's kind of what the crux of this book is that these, like both Shane and Eva and Ty, all grew up without an advocate. And you kind of see where that ends up in three different scenarios. And so they had to be their own self-advocate. And that means that they make a lot of mistakes and they do some things that they are not proud of. And then they have to unravel that in the future, or they don't have a future, which is really unfortunate and very sad. But it made this book so much more powerful.
Anyway, teachers are underpaid. That's
yes, they are.
Well, guys, we kind of like mishmashed all our questions out of order, but we hit them all. And like, clearly we're all pretty big fans of how the story went. And can you think of any book recommendations for someone who might be interested in reading more like this or different themes that you might pull out to suggest?
God, I'm like, what was the last book to stomp on my heart?
Copperhead.
Copperhead, yes.
Well, you know what I was kind of thinking is actually Song of Achilles. I might see if I can find another one. But my idea with that one is like, A, very sad. B, sort of like, not a toxic romance, but like a complicated romance that takes place over years and years.
while we're discussing identity and generational trauma and jumping POVs, all I could think about was our episode on The Vanishing Half.
I was thinking Vanishing Half as well. Yeah.
That would be my suggestion. I don't think the time POV jumps were quite as well done, but were still necessary in that story. And yeah, I'm not mad I read that book, even if it wasn't my favorite. And it felt kind of similar, just like,
yeah,
this one was very like millennial coded and that one is not.
That's actually very true.
I looked on Goodreads and they said for readers will also like, there's only one book on that list that I've read, and that's Funny Story by Emily Henry.
Really? Which,
yeah, I know. It doesn't feel very similar. They're both rom-coms. Romance, not even coms. Rom. I guess it kind of deals with a woman or a female main character finding herself and dealing with, parents that are not always the best. But I don't know. I guess I'll recommend Funny Story, but I was going to recommend Vanishing Half. So I'll just second ditto Caitlin.
Okay. Well, I have a new recommendation. I found one I like more. So Aristotle and Dante discover the secrets of the universe.
Period.
Yep. Super poetic story. A love story. Also a lot about generational trauma and family. All right, gang. Well, these are just our opinions. We want you to disagree with us. That's what makes reading fun. So give us a rating and review, but also B, hit us up with some of your thoughts and send us some book recommendations. You can find us pretty much everywhere at Busy Girls Pod. I'm Casey.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Caitlin. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.